Okay, I want to start here. We're going to talk about the ends of the age, signs of the end of the age, and we've got to understand these things in order to share this with this generation. These are things that we must understand that apply to us. These are the things that Jesus shared with his disciples, and that his disciples have made sure that we have. Now, in the building of the Last Days Church, we need to understand these things ourselves in order to relay a correct understanding for the church and then eventually to the world of exactly what's going to happen. Now, when we talk about the end of the age, one of the things that we have to have foremost in our minds, the end of the age concerns a last day. It's called the day of the Lord. How many of you are aware of this? The end of the age concerns the last day. It is the 1,000-year reign of Jesus. It is a 1,000-year day. It is the day he returns, and it is also the day of judgment. This day starts with Jesus' coming and ends with the great white throne judgment. It is seen as a single day. Now, I want to make a couple of points here so that people can understand about this day. We have had a number of teachers over the years confuse the day of the Lord with things that happen in the tribulation. The tribulation is actually a sign of the end of the age or the last day. The last day is the complete herald of the end of the age, and I want you to say that to yourself. The last day is the complete herald of the end of the age. The last day leads us to the end of everything. The end of this world is where heaven and earth disappear. Now, before I read in Mark 13, believe me, before I believe in Mark 13, you're not really going to understand Mark 13 until you understand this one thing first. And this, you're going to see that Mark 13 for years has been misunderstood through this. And tonight, Lord willing, you're going to understand it. All right? So, I want you to mark Mark 13. Oh, that's funny. Mark 13. I want you to bookmark Mark 13. And let me take you to 2 Peter chapter 3. All right? We need to make a couple of things plain here. All right? Dear friends, Chapter 3, verse 1, 2 Peter. Dear friends, this is now my second letter to you, and I've written both of them as reminders to stimulate you to wholesome thinking. I want you to recall the words spoken in the past by the holy prophets and the command given by our Lord and Savior through your apostles. First of all, you must understand that in the last day scoffers will come, scoffing and following their own evil desires. They will say, "Where is the coming he promised?" Now, when we're talking about the last days, exactly what are we talking about? Peter clarifies it for us in Acts chapter 2 when he stands up to preach on the day of Pentecost. He says, "Brethren, these men are not drunk as you suppose, but this is a fulfillment of the prophet Joel. That in the last days," he quotes Joel now, "in the last days I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh." And then Joel goes on to say that you will see the sun turn dark to darkness and the moon to blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord. So all of that stuff, the last day started at the time of Jesus and goes all the way till just before Jesus returns, when the sky does go dark and the moon doesn't give her light, as we read in Matthew 24. Those are the events of the last days precede the last day. Now, the way these days are counted is there are seven total days in creation. Six are creation, and seventh is God's rest. All right? Since Jesus came at the end of the fourth day, I'm sorry. Since Jesus came at the end of the fourth day, in other words, at the end of the 4,000-year mark, how many days are left from there? 3 days, right? because there's a set total of seven. Jesus came at the fourth day, as there's 3 days left. All right? From the time of Jesus' death till now, 2 days have basically passed. We're at the end of the sixth day, or the second day since Jesus came. The last days refer expressly to these 2 days, the last days. And then we have what is called the last day. The last day is the thousand-year reign of Christ. A day with God is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are as a day. So when Paul said, when Peter says, first of all, verse 3, you must understand that in the last day scoffers will come, scoffing and following their own evil desires. All right, we've seen these scoffers first represented, right, through the Pharisees, right, when they crucified Jesus, through the Romans, through Pontius Pilate, and through the emperor or the king, what's his name, Herod. So we've seen this expressed through Herod, we've seen this expressed through the Jewish leaders of the Sanhedrin, and we've seen this expressed through the Roman leader Pontius Pilate. Right? Scoffers, scoffing at Jesus. And ever since then, we have had scoffers here in these last days talking about where's the coming of the Lord, right? You must understand on the last day, scoffers will come scoffing and following their own evil desires. They'll say, where is the coming he promised? Ever since our fathers died, everything goes on as it has since the beginning of creation. But they deliberately forgot that long ago, by God's word, the heavens existed and the earth was formed out of water and by water. By these waters also the world of that time was deluged and destroyed. By the same word, the present heavens and earth, and hear it, this is a fact, by that same word, the present heavens and earth are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men. Now somebody tell me, what is the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men? What is the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men? It is that thousand-year day, the one that starts with Jesus' coming and ends with the great white throne judgment. By the same word that the world was destroyed by water, this present heavens and earth are reserved for fire. Now, you've got to see it almost as a person. This world was baptized in water, and now it will be baptized in fire. How many of you can see that? And that the physical is in the water and the spiritual for the fire, and one is a picture of the other. This heaven and earth, even as the world was deluged and covered in water, in other words, taken down into death. That's what the water means, death. Like, for example, now, if you're baptized into Christ, you're baptized into his death. And how do you symbolize that? By going down into the deep of the water and then coming up alive on the other side of that water, right? That was the sign of Jonah. Remember when Jesus said, it's an evil generation that seeks a sign, and the only sign they'll get is the sign of Jonah? Where the prophet Jonah was thrown into the water, into the deep, and swallowed by a big fish, and then spit up alive on the other side? For 3 days, he was in death, wasn't he? And then spit up alive on the other side. The water is a picture of death. When you go down into the water to be baptized of Christ, you are baptized into his death, that when you rise, you might rise to a new life and leave the old one in the grave. How many of you see that? So as this world underwent that baptism, you've got to understand what the flood was about. It is a promise. It is a promise this world will be destroyed. The world being baptized in water is a promise that this world will be destroyed. It will be consumed. How many of you can see that? So the idea is that for there to be a new heaven and a new earth, just like for you to be new body and spirit, a living soul, that old one has to die, doesn't it? Right? The way you were in Adam, body and spirit, must be destroyed so you can be remade body and spirit in the image of Christ, right? You symbolize that in the water baptism, but in the baptizing by fire is where you get the reality. And that's where your body is changed too, right? Your body's got to be consumed in death, though, for it to have that change, right? You've got to die. The only way to get resurrected is to be dead. Well, it's the same way for the world. By the same word, the present heavens and earth are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men. Now, when are those ungodly men destroyed? They're destroyed not just physically, but they are destroyed eternally at the end of the thousand-year reign of Christ, at the great white throne judgment. When are heaven and earth destroyed? At the great white throne judgment. And let's prove it. All right? Step even further into Revelation chapter 20, starting in verse 11. Then I saw a great throne and him who was seated on it, a great white throne, earth and sky, heaven and earth, fled from his presence. And there was no place for them. You hear it? Earth and sky fled from his presence, and there was no place for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and the books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books. And then it tells us, you know, everyone whose name was not in the book of life was thrown into the lake of fire. That's that destruction, a baptism of fire. Can you see it? This heaven and earth are reserved for that fire and that judgment. Heaven and earth pass away. They flee from his presence because there's no place left for them. And then in verse 21, we see a new heaven. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth had passed away. Now compare that with what Peter's saying. By the same word, the present heavens and earth are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men. Now these two points, and tell me if you see it yourself. These two points. Tell me if you see it yourself. In the first place, we see that heaven and earth picture a body and a spirit. In the same way, you must die according to the body and spirit to be redeemed body and spirit through Christ, changed, a new creation, is the same way heaven and earth must be destroyed according to the physical in order to be remade according to the spiritual. How many of you see that? The old must pass away that it may be made new. And it undergoes the same baptism that you did. Well, remember, first you were born of water. Right? Like the flood. You were born out of your mother's water sac. Then you're born out of fire, out of the spirit. Right? Both of them. One. So you can say that your birth out of water is a prophecy of your birth out of fire. Can you say that? Because the physical testifies to the spiritual. Can you say your birth out of water was a prophecy of your birth out of the Spirit? Can you see that? How many of you would say that? In the same way, this world was born out of water. And Noah landed upon a brand new place, didn't he? And it's a prophecy of an earth that's going to be born out of fire. Right? Can y'all really see that connection between the two? All right. The second thing you have to understand is the next verse. But do not forget this one thing, dear friends. Now remember what he just said in the previous verse. By the same word, the present heavens and earth are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of a godly man. Now how long is that day? The next verse tells you. That's the only day mentioned here, isn't it? The day of judgment. It's the only day Peter mentions, right? How many of you see that? It's the only day he mentions. 1,000 years. Do not forget this one thing, dear friends. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. Now, put the two together. By the same word, the present heavens and earth are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment, the 1,000-year reign of Christ, and destruction of ungodly men, where they're thrown into the lake of fire. Right? That's where they're destroyed. Do not forget this one thing, though, dear friends. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. See, that's the only day he's talking about, right, is the day of destruction. Right? The day of the Lord. And he's trying to tell you that day is 1,000 years long. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. It's actually pretty quick. It's only a few days. The last days and the last day, right? 3 days. Now, I want you to see that comparison. How many days was Jesus in the ground? How many days was he in death? In the grave? How many days? 3. And he came born out of that death, out of that grave, out of that tomb, out of that womb, so to speak, through the resurrection of the dead. Right? And you, in these 3 days, all of those of mankind will stand before that resurrection, won't they? Us at the beginning of that day, and the whole rest of mankind at the end of that day. We come up out of 3 days. Get it? From the time Jesus came to the time he returns and sets up his kingdom to the great white throne judgment, that will be 3 days, won't it? That's the end of the age. And therefore, that 1,000 years, can you see where, how many of you can see this? Can you see where our resurrection is really one thing? We're the first fruits, we at the beginning of that last day, when Jesus returns. And then the whole lump, of which we're first fruits of, at the end of that day. But all will be resurrected to stand before God in judgment, won't they? But we're of the first fruits, we get at the beginning of the day. So really, it's one resurrection, right? It's just that we're the first fruits of that resurrection. How many of you can see that? It's one resurrection, but we're the first fruits of it. Because they both happen in the same day. One at the beginning of that day, at Jesus' return, and one at the end of that day, at the great white throne judgment. And this is something you need to understand. So, he's patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The day of the Lord, that 1,000-year reign, will come like a thief. Because it starts with Jesus' coming. The heavens will disappear with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Well, that doesn't happen the minute Jesus returns, does it? Or else, where would he rule and reign from? It happens at the end of that day. Right? Heaven and earth flee from his presence, and there's no place found for them. See it? Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth had passed away. So, the day of the Lord will come like a thief. And in that day, the heavens will disappear with a roar, the elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything in it will be laid bare. And since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. What is the day of God? That 1,000-year reign of Christ, right? That day, here, listen to it, that day will bring about the destruction of the heavens by fire, and the elements will melt in the heat. But, in keeping with his promise, we're looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness. Now, that parallels exactly what it tells us in Revelation 20, doesn't it? Doesn't it? That Jesus will come and rule and reign for that 1,000 years, for that day of the Lord. And at the end of the day, we see a great white throne judgment in which the world and the heavens will pass away. The physical. But we see a new heaven and a new earth after that, don't we? Now, this is the clarity of the end of the age. The end of the age concerns the 1,000-year reign of Christ leading up to the great white throne judgment. So, we want to be able to see the... When Jesus is speaking about the end of the age, we want to see that in this frame, don't we? So in chapter 13 of Mark, as he was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings. Do you see all these great buildings? Replied Jesus. Not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. And as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, Tell us when will these things happen, and what will be the sign of that they are about to be fulfilled? Now, I want you to notice what Jesus tells you. Watch out that no one deceives you. I want you to notice he doesn't focus just on that temple. Notice. Watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name, claiming I am he, and will deceive many. You hear wars and rumors of wars. Do not be alarmed. Such things must happen. But the end is still to come. What end is he talking about? He's talking about the day of the Lord, isn't he? Is this true? He's not just talking about the end of Jerusalem here. He's talking about the day of the Lord. But notice what he does with that destruction of Jerusalem. See, that destruction of Jerusalem is a picture of the destruction of the world. Did you know that? That destruction of Jerusalem and its buildings. Listen to what he says. Don't just see Jerusalem here. See the world. Okay? Because one thing is a figure for the other. Do you see all these great buildings? Replied Jesus. Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down. Compare that with what Peter said. The earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Can you see that one thing is a figure for the other? And why Jesus goes into talking about not just the end of Jerusalem, but the end of the world. Nation will rise against nation. Kingdom against kingdom. See, we're not talking about just Jerusalem anymore, are we? There'll be earthquakes in various places and famines. These are the beginning of the birth pains. You must be on your guard. You'll be handed over to the local councils and flogged in the synagogues. On account of me, you will stand before governors and kings as witnesses to them. And the gospel must first be preached to all nations. Whenever you are arrested and brought to trial, do not worry beforehand what you will say. Just say whatever is given to you at the time, for it is not you speaking, but the Holy Ghost. Brother will betray brother to death, his father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. All men will hate you because of me, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. Somebody tell me, what end are we talking about? The end of Jerusalem and its buildings? Or the end of the world? What end are we talking about? The end of Jerusalem and its buildings? Or the end of the world? Do you see? Very good. So when you see the abomination that causes desolation standing where it does not belong, now this is cool. See, Jerusalem is a sign of the end of the world. Just like this temple right here will be a sign that it's all about to be destroyed. When you see the abomination of desolation standing where it does not belong, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let no one on the roof of his house go down to enter into the house or take anything out. I want you to see something here that's in figure, that's hidden and has been hidden for so long. Okay? When you see the abomination that causes the desolation standing where it does not belong, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Now, Judea speaks of Jews, right? Now, they've got to go to a high place. They've got to flee when they see the abomination of desolation. They've got to flee to the mountains, right? They don't go back down. Let no one, and listen, let no one on the roof of his house go down or enter the house or take anything out. I want you to think about the world now, not just Jerusalem. I want you to think about Judea as being a figure for the people of God. And when we're going to the mountains, right? When we see the abomination of desolation standing where it doesn't belong, let those in Judea flee to the mountains. We must flee to heaven. Do you see that? We must flee to heaven. We must flee to heaven when we see these things happening. Ooh, hold on. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to enter the house or take anything out. Remember about Lot's wife? She turned back at what she was losing and turned into a pillar of salt. you cannot go back. When you see these things happen, it's too late. You must leave this world behind and its possessions. Don't go back. See, it's physically talking to these Jews, but it's spiritually talking to us, isn't it? How many of you begin to see it here? Let the reader understand. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one go on the roof of his house, go down to enter the house or take anything out. You brought nothing into this world and you can't take nothing out of it, right? Let no one on the roof of his house go down. See, if you're sitting on the roof of your house is your body. What does it mean figuratively if you're sitting on the roof of your house? It means you're looking to leave it. Now, let me ask you something. If you're standing in faith right now as a Christian and your hope is in heaven and in the resurrection of the dead, aren't you standing on the roof of your house because you know you put no hope in the comfort of that house? You ain't living in this house anymore. By faith, you're standing on the roof of this house, aren't you? Let no one's on the roof of his house go down or enter the house to take anything out. You got to leave this world and its body and everything else behind, right? Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. Don't be looking for a carnal cloak covering. You see it? How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. How dreadful it will be for those who you are trying, you know, you're trying to lead people to the Lord. You're going to have a burden, aren't you? You're going to have to leave younglings. When you're told to flee to that place, you're going to have to leave them behind, aren't you? Younglings. You know what I'm saying? People that you are nursing toward the gospel. And woe to those who give suck in those days. Who are feeding others. Right? Verse 16. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. That's talking about congregations and stuff, isn't it? Nursing mothers. Pray that this will not take place in winter, because there will be days of distress unequal from the beginning when God created the world until now, and never to be equaled again. If the Lord had not cut short those days, no one would survive, but for the sake of the elect, whom He has chosen, He has shortened them. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or look, there He is, do not believe it. And here's the point. If you can see them, they ain't it. If somebody has to point to you and say, hey, look, there He is. Or somebody has to inform you, look. Because what does it tell us? It tells us that when Jesus comes, every eye will see Him, huh? Every eye will see Him. Every eye will see Him. It tells us in Matthew 24, as lightning shines from the east and is visible to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. Everybody will see Him. So if somebody says, look, there He is, they've already lied to you. The minute anybody has to say, look, there He is, they've lied to you, because it ain't Him. Because everybody will know, won't they? For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform signs and miracles to deceive the elect, if that were possible. So be on your guard. I've told you everything ahead of time. But in those days following that distress, now these are the signs that tell you the day of the Lord is on its way. Remember what Joel said, as Peter quoted him. All right, the sun will be darkened and the moon will turn to blood before the great notable day of the Lord. Listen to this. The sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. And at that time, men will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory, and He'll send out His angels and gather His elect, that's us, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heavens. You see that? So, the point is that we want to see here that the sign of the end of the age is the abomination of desolation. Now, you've got to understand that it's twofold. It's physical and spiritual. While in Israel, these Jews will see a man take his seat in the temple and proclaim himself God. All over the world, though, we will see a great falling away where the sin man, the one that all these Christians that fall away call dead, right? He will take his seat in their hearts, won't they? He ascends from the bottomless pit. They declared Adam dead. right? They declared him dead. The sin nature is the Antichrist in you, and he gets his power and seat and great authority from the devil. And if you claim Christ now through faith, you put that man of sin to death, haven't you? That son of perdition, Adam. The sin nature. Well, what happens if you turn away from Christ? You resurrect the one you call dead, don't you? If you turn away from Christ, if you turn away from faith, you rebuild what you destroyed. Like that temple, huh? Being rebuilt. For him to take his seat in it. Do y'all begin to see it? Physically and spiritually. These are the signs of the end of the age. And when you see this great falling away in the church, right? Them going back and resurrecting that man of sin, and these are the people who will worship the Antichrist, then you know it's time for you to flee, isn't it? It's time for you to turn your back on everything in this world. It's time for you to let go. Like Jesus said, like the guy said to Jesus, wait, hold on, I want to follow you, but I got to marry mom and I got to bury mom and pop first. And what did Jesus tell him? Let the dead bury the dead. Well, what about that nursing women and pregnant mothers? When the time comes, you're going to have to flee, aren't you? You're going to have to let go all the cares of this world. You're going to have to trust them to God, aren't you? Pray that your flight not be in winter. All of this has a meaning, guys. How many of you can see it? It has a meaning. It's not just talking about Jews departing from Judea. There's more here. There's more here for you. Go into the mountains. Flee to the heavenlies. That's where your hope comes from. People that are on the roof of their house, don't go back. Don't go back on your faith. People on the roof of their house are waiting to be received, aren't they? You've counted your house and everything in it a loss. You're looking to be taken from it. Naked came you into this world, and naked shall you leave it. And that house is this body, and it's got to be left behind. You can't flee with it. Just like they cannot flee with their houses into the wilderness, you into the mountains, you cannot flee with this body of flesh. You have to leave it. You have to trust it to God. You have to look heavenward. And that's what it's telling us to do, isn't it? To look heavenward where our salvation comes from. You know, I lift up my eyes into the hills. From whence does my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Remember? I lift up mine eyes into the hills. We must go into the mountains. We must flee to there. We must flee to the bosom of God. And it's a spiritual thing. And we can't let anything in this world. You remember what Jesus said? To be my disciple, you must hate who? The members of your own household will be your enemies. You must hate mother and father and brother and sister and daughter-in-law and mother-in-law. You know, you must forsake all for me. Can you see where that nursing mothers and pregnant women apply? You must turn your back on the cares of this world and trust these things to God, huh? You must let the dead bury the dead. When it's time for you to flee, you must not be locked in the everyday events of your lives. Because that's the way these people are caught. And like in the days of Noah, they'll be marrying and giving in marriage and eating and drinking and know nothing until it comes and takes them away. That's not who we are. We're not invested in this life anymore. We've left it behind. Like Lot, we've left it behind. So this fleeing means a lot more than just running away, doesn't it? Right, we are strangers and aliens in this world, and people who speak such way show that their hope is in God through the power of the resurrection. These are the signs that we will see that lead up to the last days. And when you see that abomination of desolation, then you know the last day is upon you. You know the judgment of God is about to fall here on this earth. And you don't want to be a part of this earth anymore then, do you? We have very clear signs. And I want you to see that the foundation of this last day's church is one of those very clear signs of how close the end is. Y'all see it? It's a good place to stop.